Ding. Okay.
Okay, so we are in Wellington, Aotearoa, at the home of Val Morse, who is, among many other things, one of the Uruwera 18. And if that is a term that's unfamiliar to you, it is something we're going to be talking about here on Tree Frog Radio. So, Val, would you give us perhaps a little background on where that all comes from, the terror raids and that history here?
On the 15th of October, 2007, the New Zealand police raided some 60 homes around Aotearoa, around New Zealand, and arrested people, initially 17 people, under charges pending under the Terrorism Suppression Act. So in my particular case, they came into my office at 5:45 in the morning in Trades Hall in central Wellington, where I had an office, and I was sleeping on the couch, and busted in and said, "We believe you to be participating in a terrorist group." So they arrested me and took me down to the police station and tried to question me. And they said, "We believe you have been participating in paramilitary training camps in the Uruwera." And the Uruwera is a region in the North Island of New Zealand, which is home to the indigenous Tūhoe people near the town of Whakatāne. And Uruwera means in Te Reo Māori, in the Māori language, means burnt penis, and is the home and beautiful, lush, temperate rainforest, home to much of the Tūhoe community. So the terrorism charges in New Zealand are a charge that requires the permission of the Solicitor General. Those charges cannot be brought simply by the police alone. So initially, as a holding pattern, they charged us with possession of arms, of weapons, and we waited in prison for about 26 days while the Solicitor General sifted through all of the police case to decide whether or not he would bring those charges under the Terrorism Suppression Act. So that day, the 15th of October 2007, really stands out as the day the raids came for us. And as you can imagine, New Zealand's Terrorism Suppression Act, probably very similar to similar legislation in Canada, but certainly modeled on the U.S. Patriot Act, passed shortly after 9/11.
Okay, well, I can't let this one go because I know people are going to wonder where this comes from. You mentioned burnt penis as the translation of Uruwera, and I know there's a history in terms of colonial struggle there, so maybe you can tell us about that.
New Zealand obviously is a colonial country and is still very much beholden to its colonial origins. So the indigenous people of New Zealand are a diverse people, Māori people, and Māori in indigenous language means simply common. And so Māori never referred to themselves as Māori prior to the arrival of the colonizer. They were of their individual iwi, of their individual tribe or sub-tribe. So Māori now, I guess, is a term used in opposition to the colonizer or to white people, Pākehā. And the history of in the Uruwera is, I suppose, particularly grim. The people of Tūhoe were declared to be in rebellion in about 1863, and this was a convenient way for the government, essentially, to go in and steal their land. So a group of people who were effectively standing up in self-defense of their own lands and their own people against colonial expansion were declared under the New Zealand Settlements Act and the Suppression of Rebellion Act to be in rebellion, and that then subsequently allowed all of their land to be confiscated. So there was a huge swath, some more than 1 million acres of Tūhoe land that was confiscated in 1863. And about 10 years later, there was a sort of a quasi-religious figure called Te Kōti who was very much an anti-colonial figure who fought against the crown and was banished, exiled to the Chatham Islands. And he came back and led a campaign in an attempt to unite Māori against colonization and sought refuge in the Uruwera, while the crown went after him with a vengeance and invaded again the Uruwera and burnt their lands, killed the women and children, and sent many of their people off to prisons around the country.
And so these terror raids that happened in some ways are a continuation of that same colonial struggle in relation to confiscation of the land. It seems that this history is an ongoing one. So as I understand it, many of the people in the Uruwera 18 are people of Tuwe Maori kind of descent and cultural identity. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think probably 13 of the 18 people identify as Māori. Most of them are Tuhoi, although not all of them. They are from iwi around the country. And I guess what I would say is that in this land, the issue of colonization is very much alive. It is an ongoing daily reality for Māori people. And it is a political reality insofar as there is a process by which the Pākehā, largely white government, is attempting to reconcile and remedy the claims of Māori for recompense, reconciliation, an apology, and a sort of a settlement. So that is called the Treaty of Waitangi settlement process. And that came about largely through Māori struggle in the 1970s. There were great big land marches and demands for justice, demands to be essentially held to account for the original founding document of New Zealand, which is the Treaty of Waitangi, signed on the 6th of February 1840. Between the Crown and about 500 chiefs, which effectively guaranteed the sovereignty of Māori, of individual iwi and hapu, of individual tribes, and guaranteed them all of their resources. So the kind of common sense understanding of that treaty, when Māori at that time were the overwhelming majority of people, was that Māori were interested in signing such a treaty because the British settlers that were here were so completely out of control that they had turned Northland, the far north of the country, into this really lawless place where there were lots of, sort of drunken rampages going on. And these people couldn't be held to account through customary Māori law. And so Māori people were interested in getting the British Crown to say, we've got some control over these people. They were in no way interested in becoming slaves to the system. And looked at through the lens of common sense, why in God's name would they? They're free people. They've got their own systems of social organization. Why would they sign up to say, we want to bow down to your queen? It's just, it doesn't make any sense. But that treaty and the language of that treaty is enormously contentious because the treaty itself, as signed by the vast majority of those chiefs, is in the indigenous language. The treaty has an English version, and under international law, when there are two versions of a treaty, it is the one in the indigenous language which should be recognised. Mm-hmm. The New Zealand government, of course, prefers to recognise and interpret the English version of the treaty, there were only a handful of the chiefs who signed the English version of the treaty, but in the Māori version of the treaty, the issue of sovereignty, translated as tino rangatiratanga, is absolutely clear where that power rests. Mm-hmm. So that is an ongoing battle every day, and that treaty settlement process now has become very formalized, but in essence is a long way from a real, just and enduring solution, I think.
Right. Sheila, you want to...
Yeah, you mentioned the land marches and things in relation to that. And it wasn't the 70s. There was also some more land confiscation that took place in the 70s. Is that not right? Or somewhere around then? Is that what the confiscation line is about? Or they came in recently, I mean, maybe recent history rather than like in the 1800s, there was a continuation of land?
The most recent manifestation of widespread confiscation is actually the 2004 Seabed and Foreshore Act.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure yet precisely what the reference to the confiscation line is a reference to the 1870s.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Seabed and Foreshore, much more recent issue in 2004, and a perhaps a little bit of a reasonably complex issue. But in essence, Māori sought customary title to the seabed and foreshore, which is the area between the foreshore, the high tide and low tide mark, right? And instead of allowing Māori to seek that through the court system, the Labour government basically came in and said, absolutely no way. We have legislated, we will legislate to stop this from happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, the court process would have been quite a reasonably high bar for Māori, for individual iwi and hapu to prove that they had had, you know, use of this area of the foreshore. But the matter became absolutely polarizing in New Zealand society, largely because of the racist rhetoric of almost all of the political parties that made the issue about access to beaches.
Right.
Access to beaches. And there's this sort of, you know, overwhelming Kiwi identity with barbecues, beach barbecues and fishing and all sorts of recreational activities around the sea. But the issue never had anything to do with access to beaches. In essence, there are some 12,500 private titles in New Zealand already, and overwhelmingly those are in the hands of white New Zealanders or overseas companies. And nobody was talking about that. Nobody was talking about access to those beaches, which have been effectively blocked off to public access. They were talking about Māori having customary use and ownership of those areas, which they had used for hundreds, if not in some case a thousand years, for collecting kai moana seafood, for, you know, customary practices and, you know, survival in essence. And so that is one of, recognized by the UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous People as effectively unequal treatment before the law. So recognized it as a racist law. And that has continued. And the national government got into power in part by a coalition government with the new Māori Party, formed out of the ashes of this debate around the seabed and foreshore. And a huge march of people, 40,000 people, came to Wellington to oppose the seabed and foreshore. Now the national government's saying, well, we're going to repeal this and pass a new law. But the new law is almost identical to the old law. So there is, again, no justice for Māori in the struggle against this appropriation of their, you know, their rights. And again,
I just want to break it and start a new one, just so that, because I don't know how this is going to translate into the
okay, whatever you think.
Yeah,
you need
it's
to
just
do.